I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Beat me up on the mamas of all mama shit.
Hey, I'm looking through my telescope and I see a mothership. Is that you? Beam me up.
Hey, DA, I'm thirsty, man. Could you beam me up for a cold one?
Hey, DA, what's going on, baby? Stop me off and beam me up.
DA, what's the silly old permission to get in that mothership?
Is my window seat still available? Beam me up.
What's going on, DA? Hey, man, I need you to do me a huge favor. My coworker's a jerk. Oh, just beam me up, man.
Get beamed up. Everyone else has. It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
We're coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. Need to know what it takes for a home loan to fit your budget and your family? Rocket can. It's the DA show here on CBS Sports Radio as we come off MLB opening night and another 14 games today on this Friday. It's Andrew Bogut sitting at home in his Met jersey, me sitting here in my Giancarlo Stanton Yankee shirt. We're all in, Bogut. We're all in. Baseball's back, and it felt good to be back. And who better to talk to and recap opening night and look ahead to what should be a wild season with all new sorts of rules and playoff expansion than longtime baseball veteran, baseball analyst now. Catch him on The Athletic, catch him on ESPN, catch him all over the place. He's Doug Glanville, and you can follow him on Twitter, at Doug Glanville. Doug, good morning. Happy opening day to you.
Good morning. Happy opening day and week, really, or weekend.
It is a whole weekend here. This is Mraz. We got Bogut with us as well. Well, let me just start here, Doug. First impressions, I mean, obviously you're somebody who's played in plenty of packed houses, packed crowds. First impressions of baseball without fans, the game and the crispness played after that long a layoff with the lack of really spring training, just this summer camp. Did it look and feel like baseball to you?
I think it did. You know, I enjoyed the competition. You know, the games were, you know, had some moments, they were tight. And, you know, certainly just seeing it out there, it just creates the energy and the expectation you always have as a baseball fan as the spring rolls around. So now as we get to the summer, now it's this push of the 60-game sprint. So, you know, they tried to, you know, pipe in the crowd noise and come up with other ways to make the fan experience pop a little bit more. But it's just it's nice to see, you know, sports and nice to see baseball out there.
Doug, if you put yourself back on the field, back into the game, what do you think the weirdest part of this would be for you? The empty seats, the empty sounds in the stadium, or maybe something else that would spook you even more than those couple things?
Well, I think it's a lot to do with trying to, you know, be safe. You know, the health and safety, whether it's the mask or the distance. You know, as a career in professional baseball, and just like anyone else who's playing sports, college, wherever, you know that camaraderie and you know that intimacy of being on a team and traveling together and all the ways you connect, you know, the high fives, everything. So that would be different. That would be extremely different because players are so habitual, right? We have these habits and we put tons of sunflower seeds in your mouth and, you know, it's just things that you do and you try to make that create comfort for you over the long haul of a season where really you're out of control of most things, right? You hit a perfect line drive, shortstop's there. Your pocket schedule tells you exactly where to be. And so the empowerment of being able to express yourself freely is highly limited. So I think that would be the component that would feel so different for me as a ball player.
Doug Glanville, our guest here, longtime MLB veteran. Doug, I'm curious, as somebody who spent a lot of time in the National League, obviously I remember you well with the Philadelphia Phillies, making my trip down the turnpike to many a Philly game when I was younger. what do you feel about the National League having the designated hitter in that lineup now, not having basically an automatic out at the end? Are you a traditionalist that loved the designated hitter, or are you breathing a sigh of relief that, hey, it's about time here, and would you have loved to have played in a lineup with the Phillies where you could have a DH in there?
I grew up a National League fan. I was in North Jersey in Teaneck. Now, they did have the Yankees and Mets, but Phillies became my team. So I was much more accustomed to just watching and enjoying the game through the pitcher hitting. And, back then, you talk 70s, 80s, for example, the Phillies or the Pirates, they had some really good hitting pitchers. I mean, Steve Carlton, Randy Lurch, there was some Larry Christensen, Don Robinson, Rick Roden. I mean, these guys could hit. I mean, you didn't want to face these guys. So there was a little different time frame there. But as I aged in the game, especially starting to sit more, I was a starter most of my career, you start to realize that what goes involved when you have to weigh the pitcher hitting, all the strategic moves you're thinking of. So as a bench player, as I got older, I started saying, all right, wait a minute, he might double switch here, he might have to do this, he might have to... And I just liked those tactics. And I played in Texas for a year, and we had Buck Showalter, my manager, on my podcast recently, and I said, all right, make the case for American League managing being more difficult. And he thought that it was too contrived to have the pitcher hit in the sense of making moves, right? It's like you're kind of forced to deal with it when it's just sort of only based on hitting. If you're out there as a pitcher in the American League, he has to then decide, well, do I take this person out or not at this given moment just based on their performance? And that may be actually tough in some ways. So I like the debate. I think that was a big part since 1973. And, we'll miss that. I'm not sure we're going to go back. I'm sure there's a lot of players that are happy to have jobs now that are like, okay, I'm a DH in the National League. That's a lot of job security for a lot of hitters that didn't have it before.
Doug, I've resigned myself as an NL guy as well. I've resigned myself to the DH in the league, and I'm okay with the 3-batter minimum for relief pitchers, but I still can't wrap my head around the rule for extra innings. But when I talk to guys that I know that work in the minors, they say that it's not terrible and you get used to it pretty quickly. Where are you on that change for this season?
It's actually horrible to me. That's just
good. Okay.
I don't get it. But I understand the idea of pitching. I mean, think about the trajectory of this. I mean, part of it is how analytics has played this huge role more than ever when it comes to how pitching and bullpenning is approached. So you don't have guys going 9 innings, 8-inning starters, and especially now with these shortened spring and summer trainings. The bullpens are going to be taxed. Pitchers go 3-4 innings maybe, and it's set up that way. So the concern is because now the pitching and the bullpen is so significant, they said, all right, well, we're going to just run out of pitchers. You have these 17-inning marathons. That's going to crush teams. Well, that wouldn't crush teams back in the day that had, Steve Carlton going 9 innings. So it's sort of part of it. Now, of course, the health and safety component makes sense when you're thinking about, okay, pitchers can't go deep into games, partly because they've had these abridged spring trainings. So there is an element of that. But, I'm reading the rules, and I'm just like, well, it's an error, kind of treated like an error. We had a poll, and my friend Wes Alexander said, hey, we can call it the magic double. This guy just, teleports like Harry Potter. It's like, he's on second. Wow, where'd he come from? And so he scores, and it's an unearned run. So you can see the Mets scenario when they go through all their being cursed is that Jacob deGrom throws a perfect game, goes into the 10th inning, and loses on the magic double on 2 wild pitches. You're just like, what happened here? So I understand they have to do different things, but I am not a fan of the magic double. So I know why they had to do it, but it's really strange. When you can't score somebody, when you can't go to your scorebook and explain how someone got there, you have a problem already.
Yep.
Like, how did he get there? I feel like my 4-year-old is like taking pieces and then, no, you can't put the catcher in full gear in right field. So they're just moving pieces around and just dropping some guy at second base.
As long as we're on the train of rules we don't like and all the switches that's got on here, something that I can't believe happened in a 24-hour run-up to opening night, Doug, is the playoff expansion, where that was on the table earlier, and now here we are, 8 teams in each league will make the playoffs. It's a best of 3. You can pick your opponent if you're one of the division winners. There's a lot of weird things that they're doing with this playoff format. As a former player, when you hear the news and you're in a locker room as you're ready to start opening night, okay, now it's eight teams per league instead of five teams per league. Are you, A, excited because maybe you were on a team that I was so feeling about the playoffs that now you think you can get in and get a shot? Or are you, B, maybe you're somebody on a really good team that looks at it and goes, well, what the heck is this? Now I could get burned after the season and lose a best out of three in the first round? Are you pro or against as a former player this 18 playoff on each set?
That's a great question because, you know, you first of all, you go into camp, and I know this is unprecedented times here, but you have a mentality about, okay, you know, this team's make the playoffs, and we have to be. And all of a sudden, they tell you, "Hey, everybody's in." You know, it does shift things. And you know, playing in 162 game seasons, I always felt the more you expanded, the more you diminished the value of playing that many games. I mean, you know, what else do you have to do? 162 games. I mean, and so I thought it should be really narrow, and narrowly tailored. And I also worry that as you get more teams, and then somebody's like, you know, 24 and 36, and they get in the playoffs. Like, well, how does that, you know, it doesn't, you know, that's what the season does. So I understand that it's, you know, can be exciting. I know they revamped it because you heard all the rumors about, okay, it's going to be pick your opponent. And then Commissioner Manfred went on yesterday and said, okay, it's going to be now more like basketball, like one versus eight and all these. So I know the underlying positive of it is that there is so much fighting between the Players Association and MLB to get to the season in the first place. They seem to work off of this playoffs thing fairly quickly, and maybe it's in part because the encouragement that they actually made it through spring training, which was kind of a coin toss with all the health questions. So they're just riding the momentum to try to get teams with these shortened seasons saying, hey, you know, maybe the best teams weren't really seen yet because they didn't get into that rhythm of 162 games. So we'll let more teams in. It's going to be exciting since the fans won't feel like their team's eliminated after 13 games. And, you know, I think they're trying to encourage opportunity.
And, Doug, along those lines of health issues and getting through spring training, we didn't get to first pitch last night in D.C. without Juan Soto testing positive for coronavirus. So, I don't know how that was, you know, your initial response to that, because I think some people have been prepared for things like this to happen. Other people maybe got scared by this as a sign of what's to come. So what was your first thought when you saw the news that Soto had tested positive and now, you know, is out indefinitely for Washington?
Well, the virus spares no one. It doesn't care if you're a Hall of Fame player, caliber player. You just, you're at the kind of mercy of it. They're doing the best they can with him, and I guess to their credit, they were able to get to a season and innovate and actually be able to share science on how things played out. So that's, you know, that may be helpful for people much larger outside of even the world of baseball. But there's still a learning curve. There's still things that we don't understand. And, you know, as a player, I'm sure they went in knowing it's possible. Anybody can contract this, and it's scary. I'm sure as a teammate, you're like, okay, well, was I around Soto? And so, you know, these are, you know, going to be concerns all season, and I would not be surprised if more cases will pop up at different times and players will disappear. And in some ways, that makes picking a leader, a winner, is really difficult because teams could lose three players in a matter of days and have to be quarantined. So it's up in the air, and you know, Soto is an impact player. I mean, this is a great player. I mean, a tremendous talent, and the Nationals are going to miss him for however long. But they have these taxi squad and expanded rosters for that purpose, that they know they have to be prepared for these situations.
Doug Glanville, our guest, 9-year MLB veteran, currently hosts a podcast with Jason Stark on The Athletic called Starkville. Doug, on the 60-game season, I think there is definitely room, and I think we all assume something wacky will happen. Now, with an 8-team playoff on each side of the league, okay, yeah, there's going to be room for some teams that maybe we didn't expect to get in. We saw the Yankees and Dodgers both win games last night, both the favorites out of each league. Do you expect a lot of chalk through the 60-game season, that the cream will rise to the crop and maybe we get to a Yankee-Dodger World Series? Or do you think this season will have something fluky happen inevitably come the postseason or the World Series?
Yeah, I see flukes. I mean, you know, really any team is in it. And now with the eight teams on each league, you have that possibility just got even higher. Just someone could get in. You're talking about best of three or these smaller series. I mean, look, anything can happen, even if you're home for those three games, because, well, for starters, being home has no fans, so it's not necessarily quite the advantage it used to be in that series. I guess we'll see how that plays out. But, you know, look, anybody can win. And as we mentioned with the health questions, Yankees, Dodgers are not immune to, you know, the virus or whatever could change. So I look at some teams, there's some dark horses. You know, you see teams like the Rays or the A's who have been these analytics machines. You know, they find matchups and value in anything. They pull it out from under a rock. And because you're going to play teams 10 times in your division, every game is a chance to hop somebody, right? You can, and when you're good at matchups and good at sort of breaking down analytics and you figure out patterns, if you figure that out early in the season, you could rattle off 5-6 wins against that division foe. So then it becomes a matchup thing. So the Yankees could be great, but if the Rays beat them 7 out of 10 times, what does it mean? You know, so that's where it could go off the rails really quickly. And you could say, okay, well, the marathon doesn't expose teams that start to do a small sample size off of how they're beating you. But 162 games usually exposes that. And so, yeah, I mean, so I think it's encouraging in some ways that not only have a bigger playoff format to get in, but you just have more opportunity early on to just get out with a good jump and a good sort of assessment of how to beat your opponent. And you look up and you could be 20-10 and be looking back like, who's going to catch us? You know. So have a good month, and you're looking good right now.
Doug Glanville, our guest here on CBS Sports Radio. Doug, we can catch you on The Athletic on the podcast Starkville, where you co-host with Jason Stark. What do you got coming up on the latest podcast?
Yeah, we're kicking around. We have to. We've had guests. We shifted into guest format once we kind of everybody went inside, and it's worked out really well. We brought in a lot of managers, you know, Dusty Baker, Bob Costas. So it's been exciting. So we're kind of thinking through who we're going to have this week, and most times we try to base it off of the sort of news cycle and see who's going to rise up. So sometime, yeah, I think Monday we'll find out. But it's been exciting. We do, you know, a lot of we do trivia also. So when we get it wrong most of the time, but we have a lot of fun doing it.
Doug Glanville, you can follow him on Twitter at Doug Glanville. If you're a guy basically like me in your early 30s, remember Doug well as a Philadelphia Philly. Doug, thanks so much for joining the show this morning, man. We're looking forward to a good baseball season, a 60-game sprint. We had a blast watching last night. Today should be more fun. We'll hope to have you on again soon.
All right. Absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
Take care.
Thanks, Doug.
What you heard there, by the way, great communication between me and Bogashan, who was asking the next question with that little bit of a gap as I was going through the plug. That was a little radio behind the scenes there.
A little excursion, A-Lod.
Right,
my bad.
Way to pick me up, folks. Right, exactly. We should just remind everybody a million times. We are not sitting next to each other while doing the show. You may wonder why there was hesitation after that Glanville answer. Yes, exactly. That's precisely what happened.
My bad, right, my friend. I'm sorry.
But, yeah, and we got all handcuffed by... Oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say... No, finish what you're going to say. Here we go again.
So...
My bad.
You know, Sean buzzes me. You know, I'm good, you know, what if you are. And I say, yeah, I'm fine. You can wrap when he's done answering, when Doug is done answering, meaning I don't have another question either, so we're good. And then Doug finishes, and I see Sean looking at his phone, so I'm assuming he's now seeing my response. Plus... I've got two versions of Sean. One is like a live one. One is the stream feed that I, so I'm not, there's a time like difference thing going on. So I'm like, okay, I'm just, Sean's going to say something. And then I didn't want to talk because I didn't want to talk over you wrapping up, which would have sounded even worse. Instead, we had silence for nothing and Doug held strong. And then now we're done. And a reminder, we're in Bristol, not at Nationals Park last
right.
night.
Right.
So, excuse me, my bad.
Real quickly, and this is what I was going to do. I was actually going to credit Connor Green, our producer today. Connor did a great job. Doug Glanville's a great baseball guest. I love Doug Glanville. For some reason, Doug Glanville's just one of those guys, you know, late 90s and stuff like that, that I really just, I liked watching playing baseball. So I was really excited to have Doug on. Connor did a great job booking him. I would have had no idea how to get Doug Glanville's contact. So again, just shows how much better a producer Connor Green is than me. But Connor sends this whole biography bullet point thing. So I wanted to make sure with the podcast and everything. So that's what I'm scrolling through. Okay, what can I make sure I pop here for Doug Glanville? Because he's been a great guest. I want to make sure we get in what we got to get. And I totally missed your answer. I just assumed you would ask one more, and it caused that. So that's your technical difficulties. That's our Vescursion at our A-Rod. When we come back, Rob, speaking of difficulties, boy, that Dr. Fauci really knows how to flatten the curve. What a whiff on a pitch. Yeah, we poor Dr. Fauci. I actually felt bad for him last night. We will discuss Dr. Fauci's first pitch. Plus, we're stunned to a news. The DA show keeps rolling on this Target Demo Friday.
Grab a surge protector. You're about to be zapped.
I have a big wiener in my hand.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
I do have a big wiener in my hand. Lots of hot dogs today as we have MLB opening day. Tomorrow also at 5 Eastern, 2 Pacific, the WNBA returns. Get ready for great dimes and amazing buckets from inside the IMG Academy. The Indiana Fever take on the Washington Mystics on CBS Sports Network. CBS Sports Spectacular, yeah! A little bubble for the WNBA kicking off their season. And a guy in favor of the bubbles, a guy who has been hard at work throughout this pandemic, a very polarizing figure in America, has been Dr. Fauci, Andrew Bogish. And look, he is obviously our leader behind this pandemic and science and data, and there are going to be people who criticize the poor guy, people who love him, and there's really no in-between. And he comes out and he throws out the first pitch of the Yankees and Nationals. He's wearing a mask. He's doing everything right. And he... I mean, what is the best way to put this? He 50 cents it. He throws this ball way left of the plate. It doesn't make the plate. It was as if he had done the dizzy bat game where you put his head on the bat, he spun around, spun around, spun around, and then you just had him throw a baseball, and he's basically falling over himself. It was nothing short of absolutely freaking hysterical. Like, he is 50 cent GIF territory now. GIF territory, whatever you want to call him. And let me just say this, Bogish. Obviously, Dr. Fauci is an older man. Obviously, he has had way more important things to deal with than practicing how to throw a baseball. But, you know, there's been a lot of stories done on him. He's a former basketball player, so he is a former athlete. It's not as if he's some kind of nerd that came out of a lab who never probably had a catch with anybody growing up. I mean, this guy who played basketball in New York, he knows how to play sports. And you want to tell me, I don't even know how old Dr. Fauci is. I should probably know that. You want to tell me he's older and, you know, maybe the athletic bones in his body.
He's not 111 with crumbling bones. We can just say that.
But, like, I am not exaggerating to you. My mother, and I love her dearly, okay? My mother deals, and she's been battling for a long time, with MS. I know that if my mother stepped on the mound at Nash Park last night, she absolutely would have thrown a better first pitch than Dr. Fauci. There's no question, Bogues. What the heck was Dr. Fauci doing? Can the guy have a couple soft tosses in the dugout before he does this?
I mean, it was going really well at first. I mean, he starts to kind of rock back in a little pitching motion, and then when he gets to, like, you know, his, like, release point, his arm just stops working, and the ball goes flying to the first base side of first, rolling across the line. I think it was Sean Doolittle who was at home plate to catch it, and he's got to get up and go chase it down. And, you know, full disclosure, Dr. Fauci and I went to the same high school, obviously very spread apart, and there are a lot of people in this high school who, as you said, are nerds in labs who would have never had a catch in sports or far off their plate. But as we all read at the beginning of all this, Dr. Fauci was a very good high school basketball player for our alma mater, so he has full working motor skills, you would think, and that he had, you know, thrown a basketball at one point at least, so it's close to throwing a baseball. But yesterday he had like a complete physical breakdown as if he had just been introduced to the sport as he was walking on the mound. What do I do with this? Like, well, you throw it. I do what? And it just, like, he just came apart in the middle of the whole process, and it was And I would never throw a first pitch out because of that, because I know I would somehow mess it up and would be embarrassed for the rest of my life. So this is further proof to never, ever do it on any level, little league, high school, college. If you're invited to do a first pitch, I am out. There's no chance because I would do this somehow. So maybe it's like a mental thing.
Look, you described it perfectly. You said his arm just stopped working. It did start off well. He cocked back. Yeah. He had the delivery. He was almost like he had the pivot foot going. He did everything you would learn at like a baseball camp in Levittown, like we've seen. You know, he drops back, pivots, and the arm just stops holding. His whole delivery and then the first pitch literally was representative of the whole country's response to the pandemic, right? Like, it's like, all right, yeah, we started this off well, and things just fell apart as he hooked it out. Yeah. And I will
say, like, on New Year's Eve, Valentine's Day, March 13th.
And I will say this, Bogish. You know, I have obviously taken a lot of my references in life from comedy movies, and really, instead of reading books, I watch way too much Will Ferrell. I can only compare my thoughts on Dr. Fauci's first pitch from the great words of John C. Reilly in the movie Step Brothers, and that is, look, if you can't sing, just sit the heck down. And if you're Dr. Fauci, you have to have some semblance of an idea that you can't throw a baseball, right, when you accept doing this. And I know that it was a nice gesture, and I have pointed to over the last week for everybody saying it's not the right time to go to sports. Look, if Dr. Fauci himself is accepting an invitation to throw out the first pitch at the start of Major League Baseball season, to me that is symbolic of, you're the leader of everybody we looked up into this, telling us it's okay that we're playing sports here in this safe environment. That being said, I don't care how symbolic Dr. Fauci wants to be, you got to have a clue whether you can throw a baseball or not. And if you cannot throw a baseball, you can't say yes to that gig. You can't say, where's Dr. Burks? I'm sure she can throw a seeming strike right down the middle. Fauci's got to sit down. You can't go throw that first pitch if you're Fauci. It's embarrassing because now... right, fair, or indifferent, and a lot of it will be tongue-in-cheek, but there will be people that are serious about this, Bogish. Anytime Fauci speaks over the next 4 months about vaccines and everything else, all we're going to get is response gifs on Twitter of Fauci not being able to throw a damn baseball.
Well, and I can't wait for the president to tell us today how he would have thrown a 95-mile-per-hour BB right down to the strike zone. You know that's coming.
He's on deck, Bogish. Did you see this?
I know.
Oh, yeah. That's a lot of pressure. A lot of pressure. And you know, by the way, not to get political, you know he loved every minute of Fauci throwing that. Of course. And the president went somewhere into the batting cages of the basement of the White House last night, the stupid red tie on, just absolutely trying to deal and go, I'm not going to do that at Yankee Stadium on August 15th or 14th or whatever the heck it is. There's a lot of pressure now. By the way, if I'm him, I back out. I come up with an excuse. There's no way after Fauci whiffed on that the president could go out there and throw a first pitch.
Well, it almost sounds like, though, he invited himself, and the Yankees were like, yeah, at some point this year he'll be here. It's almost like D.A. inviting himself onto Gio's boat. Like, hey, I'm going to be near you. Want to take me for a ride? Trump was like, I'm going to throw a first pitch at Yankee Stadium. Here's the date, August 15th. But, like, oh, okay, fine. But he's going to tell us that he's Roger Clemens throwing strikes. You know that's coming.
Well, look, if you are anybody of importance in this country, the president, Dr. Fauci, in what's gone on here in the pandemic, after the example Dr. Fauci has sent and seeing the reaction now, you better be practicing. Like, I'm sorry, get off the golf course, get off the briefings. He better be throwing BBs for the next 15 days until this comes up, because you know everybody's going to have a good laugh if he can't throw a baseball either. And I will just say, look, we're having fun with it too. I did see a lot of people on Twitter very almost offended that people were having fun at Dr. Fauci's expense. And look, guys, I mean, we have to be able to joke around about some stuff in the series. This is, the guy threw a baseball like 50 Cent did on opening night of Major League Baseball. It's funny. It doesn't mean we discredit his work. And yes, he's evolved as the virus has evolved. Some things he said earlier have changed. We understand that. He was talking about stuff that we're only learning more every day. That all being said, it doesn't matter. We're thankful for all the work he's put in. I get it, and maybe you don't like the guy. It's still funny that he can't throw a baseball, we're allowed to laugh at that. It is like watching somebody walk down the street, and they, you know, step in a crack on the sidewalk, and they fall flat on their face and smash their face, and they get up bloody, right? And you, I'm sorry, human instinct, you're going to laugh hysterically at that person. As long as they're not dead, even if they have a broken nose, you're going to laugh hysterically because we're humans and that's what we do. When you mess up royally in front of a bunch of people, we are going to laugh at you. And Dr. Fauci throwing that ball the way he did, we were allowed to laugh at him. It was hysterical.
Yeah, and this is even better than your example because nobody got hurt. I mean, there, you could maybe pull back right. a little bit for any kind of injury. Like, there's no, the only victim here is his, maybe his pride, but there's no physical damage to anybody. You're right. It was funny. I wouldn't say it, like, makes him less of a man or less of a doctor, but, I mean, it was just funny that he threw the ball so terribly, confirming at least my fears of how that is something, and maybe I need to write sports minutes for today. Maybe this will be my sports minute, how saying yes to an invitation to throw out a first pitch is a no-win situation. Because if you throw a good one, you've got the memory. No one remembers the best opening, you know, ceremonial first pitches, or no one's been signed to a team off doing it. They go, that was a nasty slider he just threw from 60 feet. The only way that you live in is live in infamy for somehow a physical mental breakdown. 50 Cent, Gary Delabate from the Stern Show, now Dr. Fauci. I think it was Mariah Carey who basically just like dropped the ball from the pitcher's mound. Like, unless that's the only way that these things last. There's no positive to it. So again, my advice to you that I would give to myself, if you were ever asked to do this, you can't do it because you only can lose in this scenario.
You can only lose, and Dr. Fauci lost big time on national TV last night. And by the way, right before we get to the update, too, I know he has more serious questions to answer, but the next briefing he happens to appear at, or if we're allowed to hear this guy talk in the next interview he takes, because the guy says yes to the opening of an envelope, I mean, basically, you need – somebody's got to ask him about this first pitch. And if he and if he's defiant and says, oh, I can throw a baseball as one screw-up, I need this guy back on the hill, whether it's the World Series or something. This can't be a Sergio dip where we never hear from him again. I need to see this guy toss.
It's like, is it Rookie of the Year where the reporters in Chicago are daring Henry to throw a ball? They throw it to him at the press conference? That's what you need to do for Fauci. Just toss him. Throw this. Throw this, Tony. Right. Let me see what you got
it.
Now.
Prove it. Either that or own it that you can't throw a baseball. All right, Bogues, what do you got in the update?
These ones are sponsored as well by Progressive Insurance. Drivers who save with Progressive save over $750 on average. Call or click today and find out if we could save you hundreds on your car insurance.
Do you expect a lot of chalk through the 60-game season, that the cream will rise to the crop?
An injured ace, a positive COVID-19 test, and a rain-shortened game. In some ways, an inauspicious start to the unique baseball season. The Dodgers hosted the Giants in the nightcap without Clayton Kershaw, a last-minute addition to the IL with back trouble, so Dustin May started instead.
Kind of the thing you dream about growing up is throwing on opening day. It's kind of like a debut. I mean, it's a super exciting thing, but I mean, for me, it was just exciting, and I mean, it's great to get the ball going forward.
May is the first Dodger rookie.
We just talked about Rookie of the Year with Henry Rowengartner. I think Dustin May last night proved our biggest question. We did Mothership at the Movies, which is how can you tell Chad Stedman the morning of the big or the day of the big game in the locker room that you're pitching? Because that's basically what happened to Dustin May when we find out Kershaw's back was acting up, and May delivered.
He is the first Dodger rookie to start opening day since 81, when Fernando Valenzuela was also a last-minute injury replacement. May allowed one run on 7 hits over 4 1/3 last night. The LA offense finally broke loose with a 5-run 7th, eventually beating San Francisco 8-1. Kershaw first felt his back stiffen in the weight room on Tuesday. The Dodgers are not saying how long he will be out. Now, that positive coronavirus test belongs to Nats outfielder Juan Soto. He missed last night's 4-1 rain-shortened loss to the Yankees. The result apparently came from a test on Tuesday. The Nats got the result yesterday, so Soto was around his teammates for a day, not knowing he had the virus. Yet Washington says no one else was in danger following contact tracing. Soto can play once he has 2 negatives at least 24 hours apart. The Yankees winning in D.C. last night behind a homer and 3 RBI for Giancarlo Stanton and 5 one-hit innings from Gerrit Cole in his debut. The game called in the top of the 6th because of heavy rains in the D.C. area. We are getting expanded playoffs this season. 8 teams from each league. The top 2 clubs in each division plus the next two best records. And I misspoke back in hour number one. Initial reports said the higher seeds would pick their first round opponent, but teams will just be seeded 1 through 8, playing a normal bracket. Rob Manfred confirmed that on TV last night, which to me, that was the worst part of this. That I can't believe that we got close to that being reality, where teams are going to pick who they could play in round one. So I'm glad that's off the table.
I'm telling you, I preferred it, because what if you're the one and the 8 seed, their only thing they have going for them is they happen to have this year two dominant starting pitchers. Then all of a sudden it's like a buzzsaw. I think that's what it protects against. Like, if I'm a Yankee fan, I don't know. It could be any team that just, like, their lineup stinks, but they have two really dominant starting pitchers. That's how they found their way to the 8 seed. Well, in a best-of-3 series, that could buzzsaw you out. So I actually prefer the pick-your-opponent situation if you've earned that. Like, if I'm a Yankee fan, all right, give me the Twins. You know what I mean? And just get us out of Dodge. That's the way I would look at it.
See, and the only, and I look at the complete opposite, where I would never want to be in the position to pick my opponent. Because if I lose, then I'm an idiot, and everyone will remind me that I'm an idiot. So to me, the bracket is simple. If I play who I'm supposed to play, and that leaves out all the danger of me making the wrong mistake and picking somebody who ends up beating me 2 out of 3. NFL owners and players are still haggling over the most important questions surrounding training camps and the coming season. Number one on that list is finances. Owners want immediate salary cap cuts this year and next. Players have suggested spreading out those losses over the next 11 seasons, which is the remaining length of the CBA. Without an agreement by this weekend, owners could reportedly go as far as delaying the opening of camps, if and when camps open. Tua Tagovailoa tells USA Today he and his hip are good to go in Miami. And finally, last night, the MLS tourney at Disney, the LA Galaxy and Houston Dynamo played to a 1-1 draw, which eliminates both of them and sends NYCFC instead to the knockout stage, which begins tomorrow. And now, I believe, one more stun this week.
Let's go!
It doesn't take much to surprise this bouncing baby boy.
This is honestly the most stunned I have ever been on the show to a news.
The DA show is stunned to a news.
Shawnee, I picked this one for you. It is a sweet dog story. I know how much you love sweets and dogs, so we put them together, and we've got this story from Missouri. A 4-year-old lab named Cleo went missing from his home in one part of the state, was found 60 miles away in another town on the front porch of the house he and his family used to live at. Oh. The dog somehow found its way crisscrossing Missouri back to its original home. The people that live there now pulled up one day and the dog was just on the front step. Eventually, they, you know, slowly made friends with the dog so they could pet it and touch it and look and take it to the vet, where it had a microchip. When they scanned it, they saw who it belonged to and said, that's who we bought this house from. Oh, so they happily returned the dog to its owners 60 miles away, who had been looking for it for more than a week. Social media posts, all that stuff. This dog, and is the movie Homeward Bound? Is that what the movie I'm remembering off the top of my head, where a dog kind of does that?
A dog's journey as well did this, yes.
This dog went 60 miles somehow by scent back to its old house. Now it's back in the new one with its owners, but I don't know how dogs do this, but this one, sweet Cleo, she found her way back to her first home 60 miles away.
You know, this is why dogs are really, to me, the most amazing creatures on earth, because my wife and me have this argument about whether Eli's smart all the time. Eli's really smart. Like, he knows how to wave to open the censored garbage can. But then he also eats the garbage. So how smart is he if you would rather eat
he's
trash?
You.
Right. Yeah. So for a dog to just mosey out of the house and then, you know, instead of going 2 blocks and coming back to his new home, to end up going 60 miles, basically know his way back to find his old home, is amazing to me. It's absolutely amazing. And think about the dangerous roads I'm sure he had to pass. And I know this is in the middle of Missouri. You know, I get really scared if Eli just takes off across, you know, a side street. This dog did all of that, finds his way safely, and gets to the exact home and basically sitting there going, well, why aren't we here anymore? So he's smart enough to go the 60 miles to find that home, but not smart enough to understand he doesn't live there anymore. Dogs are unbelievably amazing, and this is such a good story that he had the chip and he was able to find his home again and go back with the original owner.
But the follow-up question is, does he not want to live in that new house? Is that
good
why
question.
Cleo went 60 miles to the other one because he hates the new house?
So my only answer to that as a dog owner would be this. That dog, I bet you, if I could put money in Vegas, and there's no way to ask a dog this is true, buried something in the yard.
Yes.
Or hid something like in the house that obviously the owners would later find or whatever, you know. Because there are days, I'm telling you, where Eli will be like barking to go on the door and he'll bring like a toy I had no idea he had out there for like 2 weeks that he somehow had dug or put somewhere. Or in the house, he'll break out like some bone that from like, he did this a couple weeks ago, like I hadn't seen since Christmas, that was like somehow tucked perfectly behind a wall unit or something like that. I bet you that dog in his mind had the sense that he wanted something that he left behind. He knew where it was. It's a wild phenomenon with dogs, and this is how smart they are. It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't walk 50 miles, 60 miles across highways and forests. And
right.
I'm
drinking
sure
out of puddles, I guess.
Yeah.
There's
What's
no
way
I
survive
that.
60
miles? I mean, come on. I can't go 10 miles without pulling off at a rest stop and smelling Cinnabon and going to the bathroom. I don't know how he does 60 miles going back to his house in Missouri.
I brought pretzels home the other day from a bike ride, which I think negated my entire bike ride. Like, that's how I exercise. And this dog is, without any kind of supplies and a compass, is finding its way across 60 miles of Missouri back to the home, apparently, that Cleo loves more than the current one. So maybe they should just let the dog stay back at the old house.
Look, anytime Pete the Body tells us he's overworked, just remember a dog where it walked 60 miles back home with no food or water. Now that's work, baby.
Exactly.
Well, if you say
yes, it is.
That's work. All right, that's done doing news. When we come back, we have a big boxing match to get excited about. Are you into it? Will you buy the new Tyson fight? What year is this? It's the DA Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Big upside.
I look at the clips of you guys, and I could listen to you guys talk for hours.
No, you smell butts.
That's all, folks.
DA, that is.
You're right.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
It's an Ask the Pros kind of day. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. You know what? You want to call? Pete's there to answer your phone. CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line, 855-212-4227, is sponsored by Geico. Did you know that right now Geico is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies? That's on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Visit geico.com to learn more. It's Bogus. It's me, Mraz. It's the DA Show. DA will be back in the house Monday. Unbelievably, though, Bogus, the year of 2020 continues to confuse the heck out of me. You know, we talked.
Just
we
the
had
2020
Doug
year.
Yeah, it's just look, everything that happens this year is confusing. And just when we're limiting sporting events, limiting people there, we now get dropped in our laps in September a Mike Tyson fight versus Roy Jones Jr. on September 12th, and it's an exhibition bout that will go 8 rounds.
Oh, okay.
They will not wear headgear. And here's my first question. Well, what the heck makes a boxing fight an exhibition? I mean, they're still fighting each other. It's not like, you know, I guess it won't count on either their all-time records. We're still watching them fight. I mean, it's still a fight. They're 54 years old, and 51 is Roy Jones Jr., so a couple of 50-year-olds in the ring. And as I've stated, I've seen 50-year-olds fight in family parties before, and it ends up with them just rolling around on the ground, pulling their back muscles. So I hope we get a little better than that. Are you into Tyson versus Roy Jones Jr., Bogus? Will you watch?
Well, speaking of stunned to a news, when I just saw like the headline of this, I expected when I clicked on it to like read the story that this was going to be some kind of like hologram fight, like peak Tyson against peak Roy Jones, so like see who would have won in theory had they fought at their respective heights. So when I saw that the actual people in their 50s were going to fight, I mean, Mike Tyson, I guess to his credit, has done a pretty remarkable kind of turn in terms of pop culture and the society in general in post being Mike Tyson the boxer. I mean, he's funny in movies, so I feel like he doesn't need this, but I guess he does, and no. So to answer your question, I've got nothing for this. If they were going to give me money to watch it, maybe I would watch it, but I'm not paying for this fight, and I couldn't care less about these two old guys trying to relive some glory by throwing some punches.
So you're not even, so forget the idea of pay. If it was free, you wouldn't watch it.
If it was free and like I happened to be near a television, I'd watch it. Would I make sure I was near a television to watch it? No.
All right. I'm the opposite of you. I think this fight's going to be terrible. I think it's going to look clunky, but take all my monies because I got to see Mike Tyson fight Roy Jones Jr. in his 50s. I got to tell you, Blob's Bar or Bob's Bar will absolutely have that fight on. These guys
you
may not make
both.
It eight rounds. It's Tyson and Roy Jones Jr. in their 50s. How do you not watch that? It's unbelievable.
No. I'll wake up the next morning, watch the clips, and be just fine.
Oh, forget about it. You're lost. Now, I could ask September why the heck you haven't another sporting event, but that's just me nor there. Now, speaking of which, the MLB carried on yesterday despite the star of the Washington Nationals, Juan Soto, testing positive hours before the opener. Was it a bad sign for Major League Baseball? We discuss next on CBS Sports Radio.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.